This is City Lights on WABE at Ladder's Choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes. So glad to be with you. And comedian, actor, improv artist, writer Scott Adsit. He played the producer Pete Hornberger on the NBC sitcom 30 Rock, among other accomplishments. And he's in town headlining a weekend of improv comedy at Dad's Garage. Scott Adsit, welcome to City Lights.
Hi, Lois. It's so nice to be here.
So good to have you here.
I love your voice. I feel like I'm sitting in a bathtub with you.
I won't go there.
Oh, I'm here already.
But thank you. Okay. Now, you're best known for your work as a scripted actor. I should say you're most widely known for your work as a scripted actor. Please tell us how you got into improv.
Well, I grew up in Chicago, or the suburbs of Chicago, and my parents would occasionally take me down to Second City and a bunch of other theater as well. But I really remember going to Second City like in junior high or thereabouts and seeing George Wendt and Tim Kazurinsky and Mary Gross and Danny Breen and all these really brilliant people doing something I'd never seen before. And so well and so funny. And it just seemed like a huge magic trick to me and something that was unobtainable. And then I ended up going to a high school that had an improv troupe. And the drama director there, Pat Murphy, was inspired by Second City and other things. And so he had this improv troupe, and they were kind of an elite members of the theater department. And they
this was at Glenbrook High School?
Glenbrook North, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they would do shows at assemblies and at special theater nights and stuff like that that actually did satire about the school we were going to and about the administration, about the rules, and about what was expected of students and the ironies of being in a school and being in that society. And we could actually make controversial statements. It was really eye-opening and really inspiring. So I ended up going to college to learn film, and I went to Columbia College in Chicago, and I kind of drifted back into acting because I'd done a lot of acting in high school. And I found that the teachers teaching me improv at Columbia also taught at Second City. And so they said, you ought to come to Second City. So I went and took classes there and eventually got hired. And then improv was like my life for a long time. And it still is a huge part of my life because I still improvise with the UCB in New York.
The Upright Citizens Brigade.
Yes, thank you. And then anywhere I can. You know, nobody gets paid for improv, but
mean that's not why you're here this weekend? Dad's Garage did not lure you here with a $1 million deal.
No, they put me up at a very nice hotel, though.
Good.
That's good enough.
I'm glad. Well, for anyone who might not be familiar with 30 Rock, we not only highly recommend that you download it, stream it, do whatever you can, because it is simply one of the most brilliant sitcoms ever written. And it also featured your character of Pete Hornberger. We're going to give listeners just a little taste of what Pete was like.
Oh, I can't remember any lines. I can't do any lines right now, Lois.
No, we have a clip.
Oh,
I didn't
God.
Want to impose
oh,
on you.
I just want to check everything out after your little gas scare.
Well, my pen light is working. That's good.
Now, can you say the alphabet for me?
Well, a very, very heavy, heavy debertation tonight. We had a very Darrison by... Let's go ahead and terrestation. Let's go to the bit the heaven pit.
Excellent.
And that's your character. After, was there a gas leak?
There was a gas leak, yeah. And everyone was kind of affected by it. And that actually, what I said there is a quote from a woman who had some kind of a brain... event on air in a local newscast, and everyone was worried she had a stroke and everything. She turned out to be fine, but what I'm saying is an actual direct quote. I think you can go on YouTube and find a side-by-side of me and her and saying it together.
That was not easy. I read that you spent days trying to memorize the nonsense.
Yeah, it was worse than trying to learn Shakespeare.
Which you did, and Oh my God! Did I read? You did something at Steppenwolf. Very heavy.
I did. Well, I did. Let's see. At Steppenwolf, I did The Homecoming, which is a Harold Pinter play.
Yeah.
And I was. I think the current artistic director is Anna Shapiro, and she and I were at Columbia College together doing theater, and she had directed me in The Homecoming, and I was all of 21, 22, playing a 70-year-old, but it's college, and then. They needed an understudy for Al Wilder, who was playing the role as a, I think, probably a 40-year-old, a 40-year-old man playing a 70-year-old. And Anna suggested me to be an understudy. So I went in, and Jeff Perry auditioned me, and he took me on as a, whatever it was, 22, to play Max, who's 70, and then I think also understudied Sam as well, who's also up there.
Jeff Perry, whom many viewers know from Scandal.
Oh, that's right.
Work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've done, you have some cred.
I do. I have some actual theater credibility.
And we're going to get to improv, the real purpose of this conversation, after a little bit more. For people who just can't get enough of Pete, how did you land the role of Pete Hornberger on 30 Rock?
Well, I got a call around 2005, I guess, and it was Tina Fey, and we had worked together at Second City, and we did a lot of work together. We worked very closely, she and I. And we had a lot of fun on stage, the two of us, in scenes where it was just kind of the two of us. And she called up and said, "Hey, I'm writing a sitcom pilot, and I have a role in mind for you. Would you be interested if that ever comes up in like a year?" And I said, "Yeah." So a year later, I get a call, and she says, "Okay, I have to audition you because the network doesn't trust me, and so I want you to come in, you know, do well. Don't screw this up." So I auditioned in L.A., and then they took me to New York to do the final audition, and it was me and two other great actors who I adore, and I don't know if my audition was great or if Tina just wanted me in there, but something happened, and they said yes. So it was essentially that Tina wanted familiar faces around, I think, because she was a little nervous about leaving SNL and striking out on her own. She did very well, I think.
I would say so.
But the interesting thing, Lois, is that at the same time I was auditioning for a show called Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which is...
Yes, Aaron Sorkin.
Right, on the same network, an hour-long version of 30 Rock that also played as a drama. It was backstage at SNL, and I was up for... one of the leads in that, and I had gotten to the point in auditioning, you have to audition and then audition again, and then like a third audition, you have to sign a contract saying that if you get the role, you will be committed for like 6 years. And, you know, five guys sign that contract, and then they weed out. So I had get to a point where I was signing to audition with Tina and also for Aaron Sorkin, and I was torn. You know, because Aaron Sorkin had just come off West Wing, and Tina was unproven and kind of like, you know, the woman that half the country didn't like on SNL on the Weekend Update. And so I made the choice to go with my friend because I wanted to support her. And I think I'd rather spend all day with her than Aaron Sorkin. He's probably a great guy. But at that point, I knew that I would rather spend a week making a pilot with Tina than 6 years with someone I didn't know.
See, friendship, that's a virtue.
It is, yeah.
You did something virtuous, and look what happened.
Yeah,
after.
And she was very kind to even think of me.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
So you were on 138 episodes of 30 Rock. Is there an episode or scene that you would call your favorite or most memorable for Pete?
For Pete? Oh. People ask me what my favorite episode is, I generally refer to episodes Pete wasn't in. I really like the one where Pete is trapped under the vending machine.
Oh, yes!
You remember that?
Yes!
Yeah, that was very Pete. kind of thing. I also liked...
That was MILF Island?
Yes.
The Adventures on MILF Island?
That's right.
You guys pushed the limits there with the FCC, and I hope they are not. Okay. That was hilarious. I wondered how you... I hope that vending machine was very lightweight.
It was a fake vending machine when it was on top of me.
I'm heartened to know that. That was fabulous. You know, I'm thinking of some of the moments with the character of Pete that felt like your delivery of a line was so immediate. It felt unscripted. Like when Liz says, Tracy and Jen are acting like children, and you say, and like children, they can't be reasoned with. You just put a little whiskey in their juice bottle and wait for sleep to save you. Or, we Hornbergers are famous cowards. On D-Day, my grandfather wore a German uniform under his American one just in case. Were you improvising? Was there room for improv on 31?
Not really. We improvised at the ends of scenes and right at the beginnings of scenes generally because the scripts were so brilliant and written by people whose names have become famous in themselves since. And they really crafted beautiful, ornate little sculptures for us to perform. And to smash that with a better idea sounds ridiculous. So, no, we stuck to the scripts because they were so well crafted. And also, the writers would be on set. If things changed, the writers would be there to help us out. But Tina and I would add a line at the end of a scene or bring us into the scene with some kind of like weird something or other improv. But generally, I think everybody kind of respected the script and really felt lucky to have it. So we stuck to it. We were an ensemble with the writers.
Beautiful. If you've just tuned in, this is City Lights.
Oh, listen to that voice.
I'm Lois Wright.
Let me ask the producers if you could just add some like bath noises over this.
Bubbles?
Yeah. Okay. A little splish splash.
Our guest is comedian, actor, improv artist, and writer Scott Adsit. He's performing at Dad's Garage tonight and tomorrow night. We'll be back after a short break.
We'll pass the soap.
And we're back with City Lights on WABE at Lattice Choice for NPR. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thanks for listening.
I am scrubbing Lois's back.
Right. And it feels really good. Our guest is the comedian, actor, and writer Scott Adsit. Adsit, that was a spoonerism.
No.
No, that would have been Skit Adsit.
That's right.
Okay. Anyway, Scott's in town. He's performing at Dad's Garage Improv Theater tonight and tomorrow. Before we get into improv, I just want to ask you one more thing about your role on Veep.
Yes.
Which we also loved. You played a CNN news anchor.
Greg Horn.
How did you prepare for that? Did you talk with any CNN newscasters?
I got the role after I had auditioned for a different role, which I loved, and I got the role, and like the day before, they sent me a ticket to get on a train to go to Baltimore from New York, and they sent me the script, and I looked through the script, and my character wasn't in the script, and so I wrote to my manager, and apparently they forgot that they had written the character out of the script, and the character then became someone they only talked about off camera, so... I wasn't replaced. It was just the character was no longer on camera. So things move so fast and so they change so quickly with those writers that they just neglected to realize that whoever that guy was no longer in the show. So before that season was up, I was very disappointed. And before the season was up, they called again and said, "Hey, we got a role for you. It's just one episode, and you'll enjoy it." And so I did like the election special. I hosted the election special as Greg. And then the next season, they kept bringing me back. So that was nice.
Yeah, and fun for viewers, too. I was wondering if it changed how you viewed the real election night last November, having played that fictional anchor role up for a presidential
It's
election.
Just, I mean, everybody kind of agreed that reality has surpassed the surreality of the show. And it's the writers were having a hard time just writing something that seemed credible in a world where everything was incredible.
And yet they succeeded.
And yeah, by ignoring it. They did not write toward what was happening in the country, our great national tragedy.
And you got
the glorious leader.
And you got to work with another Second City alum, with Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes. Oh, boy, she's such a wonderful person. She's just the nicest. Doesn't have to be.
Okay, this leads into this whole ethics, the whatever, the universe of improv. Alan Alda was here in June promoting his recent book, and in it he explained why he thinks it's important for scientists and doctors to become more personal and more available to their audience, and he thinks that the way they can achieve that is by studying improv.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like improv is the new kale. I mean, it's, you know, it's the answer to happiness and a peaceful world.
It's a philosophy.
It really is. And where do you come in on that collaboration? What do you bring to the table, Scott?
Well, hopefully when I do a good show, it's because I'm making everyone else look good. That's the whole kind of tenet behind, say, any improv, is that your partners are more important than you, and you have to do whatever you can to give them a better show, to make them funnier, to make them more believable, and make everything they say much more important than anything you're going to say. And I think that's a good philosophy in life. It's not a black and white thing. It's not like I'm always inferior to you or lower status than you. It's not about that. It's just about serving what the other person needs in order to succeed, and listening and accepting everything as a good idea until it's not a good idea. And I think that applies to life. And a lot of improv philosophy really translates really well to your everyday life and how you can be happy yourself by serving others. Because you only look good when you are making other people look good. And also, it's just good to be interested. I said recently again one of the great lessons I learned in my classes was that you've got to be interested to be interesting on stage. And I think that applies to every day of your life as well. And little things like that really apply. And I think new students, kind of their eyes widen when they get it. And suddenly they're happier people. And they want to spread the word. You know?
It's a beautiful outlook on life. Similar to what you've said, Alan Alda said, it's what democracy would be if we actually listened to each other.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So we're seeing more actors in Hollywood, like yourself. I mean, you've been in films, and it seems that more and more improv actors are making it in other platforms as well, such as film. What do you think that means for the film industry?
It means they can get really sloppy because they'll rely too much on improv.
Ah.
I think there's a kind of a difference, I think, between improv and ad-libbing. And I think there's a lot of ad-libbing going on now in comedies especially. And you can always kind of tell when it's ad-libbed. And so I think there's got to be a bit of moderation and respect for the crafting of a script. 5 years ago, I would have said, you know, we should give them freedom. You know, if you've got the film, if it's all digital, if it doesn't take up too much time and money, then let them go. Let them improvise and find the great stuff. But in practice, I think it's kind of, it can kind of harm a good comedy.
Okay.
To tell you the truth, I don't know if that's blasphemous for
no,
me to say.
I think it's an important distinction because it seems effortless when you have a great improv artist. But when the curtain's pulled back, like with the ad-libbing and whatever nervous laughter, you know, comes along with it, that's not the same. Why are you doing these shows at Dad's Garage?
My sister lives in Atlanta, and they fly me in.
Oh.
No, that's not the only reason. But I've been with them several times. I came down first. They invited me, and I said, oh, I can visit my sister. And that worked out beautifully, but then I had a great time with everybody in the cast. So I just made sure to find room in my schedule every year to come back.
Well, we are so proud of what they do. And Pete Hornberger once said, the more people you add, the less effective it is. Like a neighborhood dad garage band. I came across that and I thought, well, adding you to Dad's Garage Improv Theater is very effective. Scott, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
And sharing your wonderful philosophy of improv thanks. And life.
Well, thank you for sharing your tub and your time.
It's been a very bubbling experience and very clean, too.